and just pay more attention and read the newspapers. We have three good newspapers in Columbia County. One of them is Classica 9 Chief that does a good job of reporting what's happening out there at Classica 9. And in St. Helens, there's the Chronicle newspaper. And in Papoose, there's the South County Spotlight. They all do a good job of reporting what's happening locally. And they are very interested in reporting on these issues. And if you have concerns, write a letter to the editor.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us, Paulette Lukadowicz from Columbia City.
You're welcome. Thank you, Paul.
Okay. Appreciate it. And this is Paul Rowan. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio here on KBOO.
KBOO would like to thank the restaurants that have donated food today, providing breakfast. Marcy Baking, located at 1625 Southeast Bybee Boulevard, using local ingredients, proudly serving the Portland and Seattle markets. Providing lunch today was Nel Centro, located at 1408 Southwest 6th Avenue, serving food rooted in French and the Italian Riviera, with outdoor dining and private banquet rooms available in the heart of downtown. Providing dinner today was Sin Yai, 3384 Southeast Division. Sin Yai Noodles, Pok Pok Restaurant's noodle shop, specializes in Kuei Tiao, the noodle dishes of Thailand. Open daily at 11:30 a.m. More info at pokpokpdx.com.
I'm Naomi Klein, and I support KBOO Community Radio because we all need a place to talk.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It is just 1 minute after 9 o'clock. Coming up in the next few hours on KBOO at 10, it's Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints presents a recent speech by Dr. Cornel West in October of last year in Seattle, Washington. And at 11, on the Dirtbag, host Glenn Andreessen and guest Jim Gilbert talk seeds, seed starting, and planting bare root trees. To start us off this morning, we'll hear an excerpt from a powerful speech by Sister Helen Prejean on social justice and the death penalty, recorded last week at Lewis and Clark College. Sister Helen Prejean began her prison ministry in 1981 when she dedicated her life to the poor of New Orleans. While living in the St. Thomas Housing Project, she became pen pals with Patrick Saunier, the convicted killer of two teenagers sentenced to die in the electric chair of Louisiana's Angola State Prison. Upon Saunier's request, Sister Helen repeatedly visited him as his spiritual advisor. In doing so, her eyes were opened to the Louisiana execution process. She turned her experiences into the now famous book, Dead Man Walking, an eyewitness account of the death penalty. Today, Sister Helen educates the public about the death penalty by lecturing, organizing, and writing. As founder of Survive, a victims advocacy group in New Orleans, she continues to counsel not only inmates on death row, but the families of murder victims as well. Here is Sister Helen Prejean speaking at Lewis and Clark College.
Thank you. Well, if y'all can handle a Southern storyteller, we're going to be all right. Both of my books say an eyewitness account, and I don't think there's anything better, at least for me, when somebody says, hey, let me tell you what happened to me. And that's what I want to do with you tonight. I want to take you through some of the experiences I've had. I talk about it and have reflected on it as waking up. And when you think about it, you know, we can't wake ourselves up. We can expose ourselves. We can read books. We can go to lectures. We can go to classes. But to wake up and to suddenly get an insight that turns us around and shifts the trajectory of our life. From a point of view of faith, we call it grace. From a point of view of humanness, we just simply say, I was awakened. And there's a great story about the Buddha. When Buddha was walking along and people came to him and said, who are you? Are you a god? And the Buddha goes, no, I'm not a god. Well, who are you? Are you a prophet? And Buddha said, no, I'm not a prophet. Well, who are you then? And the Buddha said, I am one who is awake. And when we gather in community like this to share from the fire of our life experiences, we blow on the coals as a community. And hopefully when we walk out, we're changed because we've awakened. So I want to tell you the story in Dead Man Walking, the journey that Anna began to share a little bit with you about, of the waking up. For me, it was a religious waking up, that the gospel of Jesus, which I had thought at first was, you know, be a good nun, be prayerful, don't beat the kids with a ruler, try to teach eighth grade boys grammar, spelling, and punctuation, and loving them through it, and being charitable, and every Thanksgiving, yeah, giving, you know, food to the poor so they can have a happy Thanksgiving and bring the canned goods and be charitable. But I never got it about justice. And the more I know about Jesus, and the more I see the way Pope Francis is manifesting what it means to follow Jesus, the more I realize how the bent of being Christian is to be on the side of the marginate, be on the side of those who are excluded, be on the side of those who have no voice. Radical inclusivity, which is, I think, the theme of the night, in which I have already encountered just by being here at Lewis and Clark and the people I've sat with it at dinner tonight and being here with you. And I can't tell you how happy I was when I saw what it was that we were going to be doing tonight. And so I'm here and I'm glad. And I travel from New Orleans to Portland. And that's a little stretch of a journey. But personally, I like airplanes because you're at 35,000 feet. Nobody can get to you. You have a little peace and quiet. And I know how to handle planes. And so I'm very glad to be here, especially since I've just got to tell you, I'm coming out of an experience in Oklahoma. Here's the kind of thing that happens to me. I'd written a man, his name was Richard Glossop, in Oklahoma on death row. And he had said to me, Sister Helen, I'm innocent. And I have to tell you now, I wrote this book, Second, The Death of Innocence. In the beginning, I thought, yeah, everybody in prison says they're innocent. But now I know a lot of people really are innocent because of the broken justice system. And if you don't have a really, really good attorney by your side when you go to trial, the facts don't come out, the eyewitnesses aren't produced, and you don't get a fair trial. And now I tend to believe people. First of all, I'm believing rather than disbelieving. And so here's this man in Oklahoma, and he goes, and I really am innocent. And so I wrote to him, then he wrote back. So then I said, who's your lawyer? I called her in Denver. And she said, yeah, he really is innocent. And then I began to read, and it was so incredible to me. He was scheduled to be executed on January 29th. I've just come from Oklahoma. And then he tells me, as I begin to talk to him and those that were working with him, oh, by the way, Sister Helen, as soon as you wrote me that first letter in October, I put you down to be my spiritual advisor and for you to be with me when I'm executed. So quickly I plummeted into the depth of this, because usually, you know, you write letters for a while, but boy, boom, he just hit me with this. And if somebody says that to me, there's no way I can say no. I'm too busy. Sorry you're going to be executed. Too bad, Jenison. I'll check you out later. And I will just give you the bare bones of this to just show you how broken this thing is. Death of innocence tells you how broken it is, too. Richard Glossop had never had so much as a traffic ticket. And he was convicted in Oklahoma, found guilty solely on the word of a man, Justin Sneed, who confessed that he had murdered a man, that he had beaten him with a baseball bat and stabbed him, and that he murdered the man. And when you look at this interrogation tape that they got from during the interrogation, you see that in the first part of it, Justin Sneed says how he killed the man, the whole bit. Then there's a 40-minute gap on the tape. And then you have Justin Sneed coming back, and there's the detective throwing the softball questions to him and putting pressure on him, saying, well, you know, Sneed, you're going to be really left hanging the bag, holding the bag on this, man. They're going to go for you big time on this. Richard Glossop was on. He was pressuring you, wasn't he? I mean, you could just see the leading question, see him feeding him this stuff. And the long and short of it all is, Justin Sneed, on the word of this man, was convicted of pay for hire, that he paid Justin Sneed to kill the man, so they had the one aggravating circumstance they need to get the death penalty, and he found himself on death row, and he found himself facing death, and I've just been with him in this wait to see if, in fact, the state was going to execute him, and he's so stunned by what happened. He's like a little deer in the headlights. He said, you know, my lawyer told me there's no way they're going to find you guilty. It's only on the word of this guy. Next thing you know, have you ever seen the movie My Cousin Vinny? About these two guys in a little southern town, and they, you know, got a little can of tuna fish by mistake. And next thing you know, they sitting in this little cell in the south, and the sheriff's going, we going for the death penalty for you, for a can of tuna fish. You know, and they looking at each other going like, I mean, that's a comedy. But Richard Glossop is for real. And so that's my life. I never know what's going to be happening in my life.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. That's the words of Sister Helen Prejean. You are listening to a talk with Sister Helen Prejean until 10 o'clock this morning. I'm Ani. I'm here with Liz. And we have come down to KBOO this morning to ask that you support important programmings like the words of Sister Helen Prejean this morning. Because you know KBOO brings you truth, information, inspiring stories, news you can use, relevancy, really. It connects and brings people together so that we can understand the world a little bit better. And that is the power of community radio. And right now, that's why we're asking you to dial 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Or you can join us online at kboo.fm.
That's right, Ani, and it's really important to remember something that Sister Helen Prejean said at the beginning of this program, where she said she bears eyewitness, firsthand accounting of what she has seen in all of her work with the death penalty. And that's the kind of perspective that we bring you here at KBOO. We bring you eyewitness, firsthand accounts of political debates and discussions of all kinds of situations happening all over the world. And oftentimes, these eyewitness accounts are not things you're going to hear anywhere else on your radio dial or anywhere else in the media landscape. And that's why it's really important that you support this kind of firsthand eyewitness reporting. Pick up that phone right now and give us a call, 877-500-5266, or go online, kboo.fm, click on the jar in the little upper right-hand corner of the website, and become a member that way. It's really important that you show your support for this kind of programming. Why is it really important? We know you value it because you're listening to us right now. I mean, it's a simple equation. You listen, it matters to you. So take a moment and put a dollar value on how much that matters to you, and call us 877-500-5266, or go online to kboo.fm.
And just to let everyone know, to remind people that right now, anyone that calls into KBOO to 877 800-500-5266 will be entered in a sweepstakes drawing. There's $300 in gift certificates to the Portland Saturday Market. That's hands to yours celebrating 42 years. 42 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with international flavor and local music every Saturday and Sunday, March through Christmas Eve. And it also comes with a Tai Chi, a Taoist Tai Chi Society of the USA gift certificate, good for 4 months of beginning Tai Chi classes in Portland. Everyone that calls in will be entered.
But you got to call now.
The drawing will take place on the 25th of this month, and we want to see your name in those entries. We want you to become an active member of Community Radio, as we know you want KBOO to continue bringing you quality programs. 877-500-5266.
Let me tell you the story from the beginning, though. And it's in the beginning of Dead Man Walking. Dead Man Walking takes you through the first part of the spiritual journey of just realizing that the gospel of Jesus meant to be on the side of the marginated. It also meant realizing that I had grown up with white privilege. I didn't know I was privileged. When we grow up and we're privileged, we don't know we're privileged. We're like little goldfish swimming in a bowl. All the goldfish are like us. We all swimming. And out in the suburbs, Baton Rouge, daddy, a successful lawyer, big two-story house, during the days of Jim Crow. And we had African-American, Ethel was in the kitchen and Jesse was in the yard. I never knew their last names. And mom and daddy were always kind to Ethel and Jesse. And daddy even helped Ethel and Jesse get property, get a house, help Jesse get a job at Exxon. But never questioned the system that when we were in Sacred Heart Church, African-American people had to sit in a separate part of the church and black kids had to receive their first Holy Communion, which is the symbol of our oneness in Christ, separate from the white kids. And that's what culture does. Culture gives us eyes and ears, and the explanations I was given as a child, well, honey, it's better for the races to be separate from each other. They want to be with their own kind. We want to be with our own kind. When you bring the races together, there's fighting, and it's better to be separate. So you're a child, and you absorb that. So when I woke up that the gospel of Jesus was not just staying with your own kind and being charitable to everybody around you, but the call to do justice. Well, I had to wake up to what that was. I lived out in the suburbs of New Orleans when I was teaching at Cabrini and religious educator in the parish. So I moved into the St. Thomas Housing Projects, and for the first time, this white woman of privilege I had as my teachers, African-American people who taught me. All the rules were different in St. Thomas. I wasn't scared of policemen. If my car had broken down on the highway and a state trooper had pulled up behind me, I'd say, oh good, help's coming. Every young man in St. Thomas at a community meeting had problems with the police, terrible problems with the police. And when I did research for Dead Man Walking, you learn a lot when you write a book. Because once you put something in print, you better know what you're saying. Because if you do a little TV thing and you might get something a little off, it goes off into the air. But boy, you print it. So I did a lot of research. And I found out there were more complaints to the Justice Department about police brutality in New Orleans than any other city. But because I was living in the suburbs, it could have been in Calcutta. I didn't know. I didn't know what was happening to African-American people with the police. And then education. We had an adult learning center where you could come if you dropped out of high school. Come get your GED. Here comes a kid. He was a junior in high school in the public schools. And I said, hey, Leon, look, we're going to work with you individually now. We can just see what your reading level is, what your math is. How far did you get in school? I was a junior. Well, look, you only had one more year to go. And so when he couldn't read a third grade reader, and he was a junior in high school, and I thought of St. Joseph Academy, where I went to school, a girls' school, and where I learned leadership. where I learned public speaking by the time I was a junior, where I learned to write. So when I go to write a book, I know how to write. I know how to punctuate. I know how to express myself. And here's this kid who's a junior and he can't read a third grade reader. And what's going to happen to that kid? Even if he graduated from the public school and he couldn't read, what is going to happen to him in terms of getting a job or being able to make his way? And I felt such guilt because I was part of the Catholic school system in New Orleans. And I knew the public schools. You'd see about the crumbling schools. You see teachers having to paint their own rooms and bring their own to buy the supplies for that classroom. And I thought, well, you know, but I had no idea what it meant not to be educated. And if you're not educated, educare, like the students here that go to Lewis and Clark, you are so lucky to be going to a school like this, not just from what you're learning from the books, but what you're learning from being with each other and the wide expanse and the deep, deep expanse of human rights and how we have to be together as a community where everybody is included, no matter what is the sexual orientation or what is the ethnic root and race. Whatever it is, to be included, that we're all in it together. Just being on this campus is an education. And I'm looking at this kid, and I'm saying to myself, Helen Prejean, it's not that you're so blooming virtuous. It's just you were so blooming protected and cushioned and resourced that everything was given to you. And everywhere I looked, I was learning. I learned what it meant not to have health care and to sit with Geraldine and her sick son in Charity Hospital going at 10 o'clock at night with a child shivering and chills from fever and waiting till an intern would call her name at 3 o'clock in the morning and would learn from her child because he was studying medicine at LSU. And when Louis, my little brother, was sick and Mama, who had gone to Our Lady of the Lake, a hospital, knew the doctors. Louis almost died, but Mama knew all the doctors, and they gave Louis all the care. What is it like not to have health care in the United States of America, and you wait with your sick child? And that's what I learned about poor people. You wait. Miss Eva waited. She had a leak in her bathroom for 3 years, and when she'd call the public housing authorities to send maintenance over, they let her wait 3 years. Here's a little welfare lady over there in her apartment, so she's got a leaky pipe. She's like 400th on the list. And I'd see my dad get on the phone, call the plumber, call agency. You get stuff done. You know who to call. No agency. And you're made to feel like you're nothing. And it's while I was in the climate there at Hope House, and I'm learning everything. I'm writing in my journal. I'm reading the life of Martin Luther King. I'm reading about Gandhi. I'm reading about Dorothy Day, this great Catholic. It took her a long time to become a Catholic because she only saw the Catholics hanging out with the rich people. So she was a communist for a while because they were the only ones caring about the poor people in New York. And she ended up starting the Catholic Worker.
And we'll get right back to Sister Helen Prejean in just a moment. My name is Liz. I'm here with Ani. And we are taking just a few moments out of political perspectives to ask you for your support during KBOO's winter membership drive. And you can do that by calling 877-500-5266. That's a toll-free number, 877-500-5266. 5266, or if you're online, you can find us anywhere on planet Earth at kboo.fm. Click on the tip jar in the upper right-hand corner, and you can become a member like that. It's as easy as pie. And pie is not what we're talking about today. What we're talking about today is your support. But I do want to make a point that you are a very important piece of that pie. And how important is it? Let me tell you, over 80% of our funding comes from individual listeners just like you. You with that cup of coffee in your hand, you driving to work, you listening to us on your phone or in your office, wherever you are right now, you are one of those people. You could be one of those people if you are not already.
Well,
give us that support. Right, Ani? I'm sorry. I kind of bungled that one. Help me out here.
Well, you are one of those people that is listening that is caring about these issues. And that is fantastic. Caring about these issues is so important. These are dire times. These are dire issues affecting us. And Sister Helen Prejean, a legend, really, in fighting the struggle for human dignity for the poor and for those facing death row. Really an amazing figure in my mind, and I'm so excited to be here asking for your support during her talk this morning. 877-500-5266. We know you've already joined us with your mind, joined us with your solidarity in terms of what you care about consistently, what you focus on, and that you have made KABU's political perspectives a part of your life, a part of your morning. But we ask that you take the next step and go from being a passive listener to KABU to actively participating, actively supporting and sponsoring KABU programs through your membership. As Liz was explaining, it's how we remain independent. It's how we do what we do here at the mighty 90.7 KABU. We ask that we all come together and make each other stronger. Right now, your opportunity to do it is by dialing 877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm. And you too can throw your support in to this important social change resource.
I want to go back to my pie analogy for just a moment, because if you think about a pie, it's this big round thing. More than 80% of the funding comes from individuals. That's more than 3/4 of our funding comes from people just like you. And so we need to hear from you right now in order to keep this kind of programming on the air, the kind of programming that you care about. And we know you care about it because you're listening to it right now. And we'd also like to take a moment to thank some folks who have both become new members and renewing members. Let's thank John, who actually walked into our station here, and we got to meet him in person. He walked in to renew his membership, and he lives here in Portland. Thank you so much, John. And we also want to thank Dave, who renewed his membership, and he's out in Cornelius. And what Dave did was really terrific. He upped his monthly donation. And that's something that we also ought to talk about, that you can become a member for just $5 a month. That's $60 a year. And we can do that in a way where it's done automatically. We don't send you a bill. You don't have to think about it. It's a safe, secure, and sustainable way to support the station. Our volunteers are standing by to explain the process to you, but all you got to do is pick up your phone, 877-500-5266. I just also want to mention that we have a goal of $750 for this hour, and we are a little bit towards on our way to making that goal, but we still need your help to get there. We've got about 35 minutes left in the hour, and we need to hear from you right now. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
I'm reading about this. You know, we read the lives of the saints when we're ready for them. If I'd read about Martin Luther King before, I wouldn't have been ready for him. But now I'm ready, and I'm learning, and I want to put into action everything I'm learning. And it's while I was there one day that I came out of the Adult Learning Center right there on St. Andrew Street, and a friend of mine who worked in the Louisiana Prison Coalition office right around the corner happens to bump into me like two little ants coming along the street, bump, "Hey, Sister Helen, you want to write somebody on death row?" I said, "Yeah, sure. I was an English major. I could write some nice ones." I didn't know they were going to kill this person. I mean, you get in this and, I mean, one way I talk about Jesus is sneaky Jesus. Sneaky Jesus. Because look what happened. Hey, Sister Helen, you want to be a pen pal? Yeah. So gave me the name. We hadn't had an execution in 20 years when I started writing that guy on death row, Patrick Saunier. I thought I was only going to be writing nice letters, maybe a few poems. He'd write back. Not that I would be with him in the execution chamber when he's electrocuted to death by the state of Louisiana. And, the letters go back and forth, and then I just realize he's got nobody to visit him. He didn't even ask me to come. He never asked me for a blooming thing. And so I said, "Well, look, I'll come see you sometime." And then in the return mailman, the visitor form, "You come see me." And then, so simply put, Sneaky Jesus Part 2. He says, well, look, I'm a Catholic. You're a nun. Will you be my spiritual advisor? Fill it out. I got no felonies. You know, fill out the whole thing. Send it in. And little do I know that a little over 2 years after I began writing those letters, he's going to be executed at midnight in the electric chair. And at 5:45 in the evening, everybody's going to have to leave that death house, the lawyers, everybody, except the spiritual advisor, who is going to be me. And here's what I learned about grace, that grace never comes to us ahead of time. There's no anticipatory grace. But boy, it comes up under you as you need it. And that it was my experience of being with this man. And that is the first story in Dead Man Walking. There's a story of two death row inmates in here and their victims. Everything was a learning experience for me. So the first visit to the prison and going in and being scared and being out of my element and reading a big green sign in the visitor center that anybody steps on prison property subjects themselves to body search, dog sniffing. I stopped reading the blooming sign because I'm going, ooh, I'm out of my element. How did I get here? And then the guard bringing me through, clanging the gates behind me. There are no soft sounds in a prison. It's all cement floors and clanging bars. And then I walked, I said, where is this? And, you know, we kept going through these gates, and we rounded a corner, and then there was a green metal door, and above it in red block letters it said, death row. And then they locked me in a room. It said, well, go get your man for you. All that good friendly chatter they do in a prison. So glad you're here. Our welcoming committee would like to serve you muffins and coke. We'll go get your man for you. And I was locked in this room waiting now for this man that I'd been writing the letters to. And he wrote nice letters. And he'd always end his letters with, God bless you, Sister Helen. Jesus loves you, and so do I. And I mean, real nice. But now I'm going to meet him. And they're going to get him. And I'm pacing up and down in that room, and I was holding on to my cross and saying, oh, God, I never talked to a murderer before. I mean, this is going to be face to face. I didn't. Do you talk like regular to somebody if they murdered somebody? I mean, how do you begin the conversation? What am I going to say? Well, I didn't know. And I was getting more and more nervous, and then I could hear him coming with the guards. And ironically, the first sound I associated with him was he have on leg irons, so you're dragging the chain across the floor. He's handcuffed to a belt so he can only move his hands a little bit. Every signal, dangerous man. This is the worst of the worst. These are the people so terrible in our society that we feel we have to kill them in order to continue with our life as a society. And that chain dragging on that floor, one of the last things I remember in walking with him to execution was I looked down. I had my hand on his shoulders as I walked with him. Was looking down, and there was that chain dragging across the floor of his leg irons. And then, boom, there he is. And we're separated by this heavy mesh metal screen. And he's locked in on one side. I'm locked in on the other. But we separated by that screen. I was glad we were separated by that screen. I can tell you that. And I was so surprised when I saw his face, because I had prepared myself. I guess I thought that if you murdered somebody, somehow your face must look different. You must look mean. Or he was so human. And he was smiling. And he goes, Sister Helen, you made that long drive just to come see me. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am, for making the drive. And I didn't have to worry about what I was going to say. We had 2 hours. And he talked, I listened. It was that presence. And all these years of going to prisons, the best gift I've gotten is that maybe the best gift we ever give each other is our presence. In a prison, it's got to be pretty focused, because you can't say, well, let's go rent a video, let's go get a pizza. It's just the two of you talking. But I've learned how to be present. Isn't it really what we all want from each other, but the people we love, even our teachers, our professors, just, you know, people who are looking at us, not looking over our shoulder, texting on the side, just attention. It's the way Death of a Salesman ends, where the wife says, attention must be paid. And one of the things about the discipline, spiritual discipline of prison, is it has taught me to be present. And like to you right now, this is the only thing happening in the world right now between us. Here we are with each other. And that, to me, is one of the secrets of life, which I'm going to learn. So the first visit with him, 2 hours, and next thing I know, the guard's saying, time to leave, ma'am. Your time's up. And I'm driving back to New Orleans, and I remember thinking, he didn't even talk about what he did. And then I'm thinking, well, the first time I'm going to meet somebody, I'm going to trust them enough to tell them the worst thing I ever did in my life? That it would take trust. It wasn't up to me to say, what'd you do? You could tell me. I'm a good trusting nun. Tell me what you did, son. But I knew that I needed to know. I would wait till he would trust me enough to tell me. But the first legal question I got was, found out he had his brother, Eddie, who was serving 2 life sentences for the same murder, whatever it is. I don't know what the murder is yet. And I thought to myself, how does one brother get death and one brother get life for the same murder? And the Saunier case is more complex than this, as the book will tell you, taking you through the story. But did you know that if there are 2 defendants and there's a murder and there are no other witnesses, if one of those 2 people gives testimony, takes a stand, takes oath, says, yeah, he did it, they get a lesser sentence for doing that? Justin Sneed got out from under the death penalty because he fingered Richard and said he coerced him and paid him to kill a man. How do we get to the truth? And it's one of the things that brings you up short about the death penalty. If we do make a mistake and a person's in prison, and we're hearing about more and more and more people that where mistakes are made, some are there 20 years, 17 years, 30 years, but they're alive. But when you kill them, we can't even know when we made a mistake. I mean, it's too late to make a mistake. And what makes us think, as a society, that we're going to be able to follow these so-called guidelines the Supreme Court gave us, which is, now get this, only the worst of the worst are to be chosen for the death penalty. We don't know what that means, worst of the worst. If somebody kills my mother or my sister, that's the worst of the worst. Any human being that's killed and taken out of life can never be replaced. So it's one of a kind. It's always the worst of the worst. What made us think that we could put into effect guidelines, that we would be able to select the worst of the worst? And Anna was bringing out about the disproportionate number of people of color on death row. But you know where you really see race? Look at the track record, including here in Oregon, everywhere where the people are on death row. 8 out of every 10 people chosen for death, it's because they killed a white person. When people of color are killed in this country, whether that be Hispanic or African American or Native American, it's hardly a blip on the radar screen. The death penalty is rarely, if ever, sought for the killing of a person of a color, and more than 50% of all homicides in this country are people of color. What does that mean? It means that when you seek an ultimate penalty for the death of one of your citizens, you are outraged by the death of that citizen and are going to seek the ultimate penalty, no matter how long it takes or how much it costs. And when a citizen has been killed that is not valued as highly, I know mothers in St. Thomas who had sons killed and there was not even an investigation. And one, she'd have to wake up in the morning and see the one who had killed her son going around scot-free, going to school, going to his little job, and he had killed her son. And the detectives hadn't even come out to investigate. What made us think that we had such a grasp of the equality of life that we could say we will be the deciders of who lives and who dies, and we will be able to seek out the worst of the worst and only apply it to them?
You are listening to the words of Sister Helen Prejean here on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Ani. I'm here with Liz. And we are asking for your support during this winter membership drive. Please do give us a call right now at 877-500-5266. Sister Helen Prejean, those words are so strong, so haunting, really, as she is talking about the disparity. Ah! Words, they fail me at this moment.
That would be disparity. Honestly.
Thank you. You know, as the death penalty is applied to people of color versus whites, the roles of poverty in this, really, she's looking at it from a multi-angled perspective. And her work against the death penalty, of course, for those of you following along at home, she was the subject of the movie Dead Man Walking, where she was played by Susan Sarandon. Sister Helen Prejean's fight for justice and for the recognition of the sacredness of life in each person is the stuff of books, of movies. It's just an inspiring role that she has in working for social justice and working for a better world. And we're asking for your support right now at 877-500-5266 so that KBOO can continue being a media resource, an independent media resource, bringing you these important voices. We are looking to raise about another $600 here this morning, $590, we'll round up. We're looking for $600 of support right now in the next 20 minutes, and we're asking you to take action to make that possible, to make it real, to actualize it. 877-500-5266.
That's right, $600. So if six of you called up and gave us $100, that would be great. Or if 12 of you called up and gave us $50, that would also be great. You notice we're not telling you what amount we need from you, because that's up to you to decide. We know that you value KBOO because you're listening to it, but we can't put a number value on that for you. Only you can do that. But we are asking that you do put a number value on it right now and call us, 877-500-5266. Help us make that goal. We can do it with your help, but we only have 19 minutes left. We just need another $600. 877-500-5266.
And if you call right now, you can be entered in that sweepstakes, of course. The sweepstakes we talked about, $300 worth of gift certificates to the Portland Saturday Market, plus 4 months worth of beginning Tai Chi lessons from the Taoist Tai Chi Society of the USA. You could also, say, pick up this flash drive. It's 4 gigs of information, of talks, of things about the climate change, of archives, of special programs that KBOO volunteers have put together, as well as talks from luminaries around the world, really. Ken Kesey, W.E.B. Du Bois, Ward Churchill, Susan Faludi, Molly Ivins,
Pete Seeger,
and so many more. Judy Berry, she was amazing. And it is really a gift that you can spread around, share with your friends and family, and make sure the discourse continues to broaden. You can be a part of it right now by calling 877-500-5266.
Thanks.
So here's the man on death row, and there's his brother serving life. So what was the crime? And as I mentioned, I'm going to wait till they trust me enough, but I didn't want to be naive. And so after I'm visiting both the brothers, I go to the prison coalition office one day and I say, could I have some background information on the Sonier case? And they say, sure. And they pull out all these file folders. You know, those bland manila folders, and so bland on the outside. And I opened it up. And there on the front page of a newspaper, the Daily Iberian, little Cajun town in Louisiana, is a picture of a teenage boy and girl. David LeBlanc, 17 years old. Loretta Bork, 18. And their parents had sent their prom picture. It's on the front page of the paper. And next to it is the big, bold headline, Teenagers Found Murdered. And then I read the article. And there was Patrick Sonier, Eddie Saunier rabbit hunting out near in a sugarcane field that had been harvested. And here were these kids that pulled up. It was a local lover's lane. They had been to a football game on a Friday night. Their parents' last memory of them was of David standing by the kitchen sink there with Loretta in the kitchen, and his mama had bought him a new blue long sleeve velour shirt, and he's rubbing the arms and saying, "Mama, this is going to keep me warm tonight." And his daddy later told me, "Yeah, but it couldn't keep him alive." And these two kids are found lying face down in that field, having been shot in the back of the head, execution style, and Loretta had been raped. And I'm trying to put it together with the smiling face of the man and his letters to me, and I had no doubt that there was goodness in him. I do believe, and I have experienced it, that he was worth more than the worst thing he ever did in his life, as are we all worth more than the worst thing we've ever done in our life. But now I'm confronted with the terrible evil that has happened of these two young kids being snatched out of life in the most violent way. And I thought of their parents. And the first thought, the very first thought, was I ought to go see those parents. Every parent's worst nightmare, your kids go to a football game on a Friday night and you never see your child alive again. And then I thought, oh, but I'm the spiritual advisor to the people who kill their kids. They're not going to want to see me. I'm going to be the last person in the world. What if they say to me, "Sister, you care? You care about our son? You care about our daughter? Well, we want to see justice done. Can you be there with us? We're going to be sitting on the front row. Wish both of them had gotten the death penalty, but we want to see one of them get it. Can you be there with us? Don't you want to see justice done for our dead child?" What would I say to them? I thought, better to stay away. It's the biggest mistake I ever made in my life. And I want to tell you about having a good editor. Because when I was writing Dead Man Walking, when I did the first draft of the manuscript, I kind of downplayed this thing of not reaching out to the victim's family, saying, well, I had never done this before. And my editor, my good Jewish editor, Jason Epstein, working with a Catholic nun and reading the manuscript, said, "Well, Helen, it was cowardice, wasn't it? You were scared, weren't you?" I go, "Yeah." He said, "Look, when you write a book, don't just take people with you on the peaks of the waves when you do it all right. Take them with you into the troughs where you do it wrong." And I say it's the biggest mistake of my life because I didn't write a note. I didn't try to call. I didn't do anything for the victim's family. And I met them at the worst possible time you could meet a victim's family. And it was a week before Patrick's execution, and there was a pardon board hearing. And it's a very public thing. You sign a book when you go into the pardon board hearing of which side you're on. It's probably the closest we come in modern times to being in that Roman Colosseum where you put your thumb up if you wanted somebody to live or your thumb down if you wanted them to die, because you signed a book which side you're on. Well, all of the victims' families were pouring into that room with their relatives and their friends, and they had been told by the DA, "This is the last legal hoop you got to jump through to get your justice. You have all your friends, and you stare down those five appointees of the governor. Don't you let them deprive you of your justice for your dead child." I'm there with a lawyer and a psychiatrist, three of us, and we sign the other side of the book that we're going to ask the pardon board not to execute Patrick Saunier, and that's when I met the victim's family. And how could they not see me as an enemy? When does the nun show up? Oh, she's going to ask for mercy for the poor murderer, but she had done a thing for us. And we were walking outside while the pardon board was voting, and I rounded a corner, and boom, there they were. The Bourques, who had lost their daughter, were first, and right behind them were the LeBlancs, who had lost David, their son. And I was stunned, and the Bourques just averted their gaze like that. They just walked by me in silence, angry, and which I deserved because I'd done it wrong. And the boys' parents were right behind them, the LeBlancs, Lloyd LeBlanc and his wife Eula, and they walked right up to me. And Lloyd LeBlanc said, "Sister Helen, I'm Lloyd LeBlanc. It's our son David, who was killed. Sister, he was our only son. And Eula and I are too old to have another child. Our family name died with him, sister. Sister, I haven't had anybody to talk to. You can't believe the pressure we're under for the death penalty." And I went, "Oh, Miss LeBlanc, I'm so sorry. I didn't know victims' family under any kind of pressure. I thought any victim's family, given the chance, is going to want the death penalty." And I said, "Mr. Blum, I'm so sorry. I didn't think you'd want to see me." He said, "Sister, you don't know that till you try. He was the gracious one. He's the hero of this book, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm just the storyteller, and I made some bad mistakes. But this man," he said, "Sister, I pray in this little chapel. Come pray with me. Sister, you need to come and you need to walk in our shoes. You need to know what we go through. You've just been visiting those two brothers all this time and you didn't come to us. And it's because he was so gracious and he extended his hand that it was an invitation I couldn't turn down." And I found myself in this little chapel in St. Martinville, Louisiana, kneeling alongside a man and praying. A man who was praying and following the mysteries of the life of Jesus through his suffering and death and the suffering and death of his only son. And this man, Lloyd LeBlanc, took me into his heart, took me into his journey, and brought me through the whole journey, starting with the part where he said, "You can't believe the pressure we're under." He said, "You know what I meant by that? Everybody, sister, was saying to us, you got to be for the death penalty or to look like you didn't love your boy." Everybody was saying that to me. I couldn't hear it from anybody. And sister, you weren't there for me either. Eula and I would sometimes go to Mass on Sunday to different churches to see if a priest would get up in the pulpit and talk about the gospel of Jesus. And that the gospel of Jesus called us to forgive, to love our enemies and to forgive them. And we couldn't hear it anywhere. And so he said, I caved in. I said, "They're right." And I could see the suffering of my wife, almost lost Eula. We had to move David's grave. We had buried him in a family plot in another little town. We had to move his body to a cemetery so Eula can visit it every day, or she can't make it through her day.
Well, can you make it through your day without listening to KABU? I think not. And if that's true, pick up your phone right now and call us at 877-500-5266. My name is Liz. I'm here with Ani. We're listening to Sister Helen Prejean, a great activist who works with death penalty men on death row and with families of victims of families of people who've been murdered by men who are on death row. And she's brought a lot of exposure to the death penalty, the inequities in our system. And we're bringing this talk to you now because we know that it's important to you. And also because, frankly, nobody else is doing it. And we know that you value this kind of programming. Show your support right now during our winter membership drive by picking up the phone and calling 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm and become a member. We have just about 7 minutes left in this program and we'd still like to make our goal and we can do it, but we need your help. We still have a few more dollars to bring in and any amount that you want to pledge is fine with us. Any amount of that you decide your membership is worth is fine with us. What matters is that you make the effort right now, that you stand up and be counted. 877-500-5266. One thing that I think a lot of people aren't aware of is that we have about 45,000 listeners at any given time, but only 4,900 of those listeners are actually members. That's about roughly 1 in 10. It's not a great ratio, and we can do better. And you can make the difference between being just a listener and then becoming a supporter. Show your support for KBOO by investing in this invaluable community resource. 877-500-5266.
It is important that you go ahead and make that act of solidarity right now, because we are here in the last few days of our winter membership drive, and you, your financial support is what keeps KBOO strong. It's what keeps us together. It's what, in fact, keeps the lights on and the signal flowing to your ears right now. You are an integral part of that. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. I am so moved by Sister Helen Prejean's words this morning. She, as I mentioned earlier, has long been a hero of mine. Her ability to find compassion for all is truly exemplary. And I find her words and her work very inspirational. And right now, if you are moved, you know, you're listening, you're moved. If you have a heart, it's got to be moved. Think about this moment then to say yes to this sort of programming, to tell us that we are reaching you, to let us know that this is exactly the sort of thought-provoking, hard, challenging stuff to listen to that you tune to KBOO to get. You're not tuning here for pablum. You're not tuning here for easy listening. You're tuning in because you know social change is important, because you know you have a part to play in something greater than yourself, in the bigger whole of social change work, working towards peace and justice. And KBOO is working with you right now on those goals by providing this platform for community members to make great radio. And right now you can support it. Think about giving a $5 a month contribution. Work KBOO into a monthly budget and sustain us. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
And you know, when you become a member at the $75 level, you can pick up a copy of the KBOO Audio Flash Drive. This is a 4 gigabyte flash drive that contains new audio from our 2014 fall membership drive. This includes words from Naomi Klein, Judy Berry, all the talks from Turning the Tide on Climate Change, a 1969 interview with Pete Seeger, God bless him, and much more exclusive context from the KBOO archives, which includes Molly Ivins, Ken Kesey, E.B. Du Bois, Ward Churchill, Susan Faludi, and many, many more. That's for a $75 minimum pledge. And, you know, in addition to that, it's a win-win. You get the $75 value of the flash drive with many, many hours of programming, and you get to show your support for KBOO at the same time. Now is the moment. Now is the time. Pick up your phone, 877-500-5266. Remember that over 80% of our funding comes from individuals just like you. We need your help right now. If you're thinking to yourself, well, what can I give? I can only give, you know, maybe $5 a month. I can maybe only give $1 a month. It doesn't matter. Whatever you give matters to us. The amount is not important. The commitment is. 877-500-5266 or go online once again at kboo.fm. Show your support for your local community radio station, an invaluable resource. And to all of you who've already become members or renewed your membership, thank you so much.
And so he said, everybody's saying that to me. So I went there. I said, they're right. And I wish I could pull the switch myself. I'd like to have them both seated in the chair and then give them the juice a little bit. I want them to experience some of the pain that they put on us, on my wife, my daughter, Vicky. And then he said, I began to notice what was happening to me. He said, I was angry all the time and I'm snapping at you, my daughter. And then he said, and he did his hand like this when he told me this. And then I said, uh-uh. They killed our son, but I'm not going to let them kill me. And he set his face to go down the road of forgiveness, the road of the gospel that he knew in his heart. He knew as a follower of Christ that that is what he was called to do. And he said, you know, sister, Most people think forgiveness is like weakness. Like, oh, will you kill my son? Well, I'll forgive you. Like you're condoning it. He said, condone it. David was only 17. Every time he has a birthday, we lose him all over again. He'd be 20. He'd be 25. He'd be married by now. We'd be having a grandkids coming to the back door with the other grandkids. Condone it, he said. But he said, I was losing my life too. And so he set his face to go in another direction. He was the first victim's family I met who taught me that forgiveness, first and foremost, is not what you do to lift the burden of the guilt of the other who has hurt you, but it's saving your own life. And I began then to see that maybe that's what Jesus meant. Love your enemies. Because by loving your enemy, by not letting that hatred overcome the love and integrity inside of our own souls, then we can conquer the hate and not succumb to it.
You have been listening to an excerpt of a speech by Sister Helen Prejean, who spoke at Lewis and Clark College last week. Thanks to Linda Thompson of Lewis and Clark for help with that. You are listening to KBOO. It is just 10 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland. At 10:15, Flashpoints presents a recent speech by Dr. Cornell West in October of last year in Seattle, Washington. At 11, it's Dirtbag host Glenn Andreessen. And next up, after a couple of announcements, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film Malcolm X, playing at the Clinton Street Theater February 21st and the 22nd at 7 p.m. Starring Denzel Washington, this biographical film about Malcolm X by Spike Lee will be playing to honor the 50th anniversary of Malcolm X assassination. That's the film, Malcolm X, playing at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522